Bear Podcast, the podcast for bears and cubs, episode 212. Welcome everyone to Bear Podcast, and this is Nard.
And this is Ray, trying not to burp in your ear.
Yeah, you just had lots of
food, grill gas,
and iced tea and stuff. Okay, we have guests today. Yes. We have a couple, a gay couple. We've been together for more than 9 years. Is that right? Okay,
going on nine.
Going on 9 years. Yes, yeah. Miguel and Step. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. How are you?
Yes, good. How are you?
And this is a continuation of our Father's Day special.
Yes, and this is still a Father's Day special. And the other day, episode 211. Wait, oh, I'm sorry, that's 212. Episode 212.
Well, we can change it when we get done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was episode 212 when with Gary and Andrew. They just had their baby, and it's awesome.
So they're co-parenting,
and yours is a different situation. So probably Gray can go ahead.
Okay, I asked Steph and Miguel to be with us today because talking about fatherhood and being gay, I figured it'd be good to get some different perspectives on how you become a father when you're gay, other than traditional get a female pregnant and have a baby either out of wedlock or married and then divorce and realize you're gay. But this is one where the couple's actually gay and they are adopting a child or children. Depends on what how the agency works it. So I'll let you guys talk about it. Kind of where do y'all want to start? I mean, what made y'all decide to want to be fathers?
Okay, I'll go ahead and start this a step. Basically, I mean, we've been together 8.5, going on 9 years, and throughout our relationship, there's been times where I wanted a child and he didn't. Okay. Then came the point where he wanted a child and I said, no, I'm not ready for that. Mm-hmm. And then about a little over a year, about 15 months ago, I was at a business trip in Austin, came back, and you know, I asked him, I said, do you still want to adopt? Do you still want to have a family? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes. And so we happened to be in the right place at the right time. And that's when we decided to get the ball rolling to look into what our options are, how we can go about adopting, because, you know, being down here in Texas and the Bible Belt, mm-hmm, you know, most people think it's one of those things that it's not going to happen. But, you know, we've talked to some friends who have adopted. They gave us the name of an agency, mm-hmm, and went through classes, lots and lots of training that probably some straight families and parents should go through too. But did the classes and got our name filled in the pool, and that's how we kind of came about.
So true, so true. I have to say that this has been one of the most educational, frustrating, exciting, and heart-wrenching pieces we've ever have to go through, because it has tested not only our relationship but also a relationship with others, because it's actually expanded our world of what is acceptable, what isn't acceptable. People's true colors actually come out when you start talking about children. Yeah. And so we've been through, we've received some really great yays, and so we've also had a lot of negativity thrown in our faces as well.
From listening to dealing with family, mm-hmm,
yeah,
and to friends.
Yeah.
We've had that battle on both fronts.
So true.
And you're pretty much, you know, it's okay with your family. They, you know, it's the family knows know about it already, that you guys are.
True. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Both of our families know. I, coming from a very large family, you would assume that it would be almost secondhand that, oh, yeah, coming from large families, you know, that children are accepting and what have you. But come to find out that, yes, it's accepting, but as long as it's within the same bloodline. And so I've received the most resistance from some family members because of that, because it's not from the same bloodline.
Hmm. Ah, so that's very interesting. Actually, my grandmother was the same way, because my aunt adopted a little girl. And she treated her the same as the rest of us, but when she went around, she always made comments, well, you know, she's not my real grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
And it just always blew me away that she could do that. But just, you know, that's how she was raised, I guess. Or
it's the mindset of the way they're born. Yeah, it's not their blood.
Yeah.
You know, we've had those challenges. my family's been very, you know, hey, let's, you know, hey, that's fine. More for the family and more, you know, kids to love. And
has Steve been approved? Steve is your brother.
Yes.
Has he been approved for babysitting duties yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
As soon as we can, he will. Okay. Trust me. Trust me. We want him to babysit because we know he's a good babysitter.
And note to Steve, please, sorry, you cannot wear the Speedo in the pool. There's no way.
Don't damage the children at that young age.
Yeah, exactly.
Some would like it. Some people, some grown-ups would like it.
Yes, but
it's been enough.
Yeah. But these are kids here.
Kids.
We're
that's
talking
right.
children, children so. Young children. So
when we were talking earlier, y'all were talking about all the stuff you had to get there, and you said, unfortunately, y'all kind of felt like you were buying a car.
That,
I mean, just
that
because of the, just because of the process you were having to go through. Can you tell us a little bit about the? I'm sure it's like government work. It's like more and more paperwork than you can imagine. So.
Yes, there are. There's so much paperwork, and you would assume that because you are willing to give of yourself to take a child into your care, that the process would be easier. But unfortunately, because of the heightened awareness of pedophilia and also the risk of finding bad parents, and you know, not only pedophilia but also just abuse in general, you know, psychological abuse, physical abuse, anything to that nature, that the state has become much more rigid on who is allowed to become either a foster parent or adoptive parent. I mean, because of that, then they make you jump through so many hoops. But once you get to that point that you've passed all the hurdles, then you know the process is don't get emotionally attached, because the child that is being selected for you, or you're going through the selection process, unfortunately, they want you to make sure that there isn't a true attachment there, because in case it doesn't happen, then you don't have to go through that loss. And it's really funny because, you know,
we've experienced this already.
Yes, exactly. And it's really funny because as straight couples, when straight couples cannot physically adopt, or excuse me, when straight couples cannot physically have children, then they go through a grieving process, because it's almost like a loss. They've lost their control because they cannot control the situation, so now they have to rely on others.
Mm-hmm.
As for gay couples, we don't have to go through that, because we choose not to
go the normal route.
Yeah, go the normal route, the natural biological route.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have no association there. And so, but the agencies working off of straight mentalities don't realize that we've already had that separation, or that separation isn't there yet. And so they don't want you to become emotionally attached to the child yet, because there is that possibility that the child will not, you know, be the perfect fit for you, or that the child would either be happy with you at the beginning but then has some reservations, because they, you know, it is ultimately up to the child to see if they want to be adopted or be placed in your care. So if the match isn't good, then even though you want it to happen, you have to be realistic to know that it's the child who you have to always keep in mind. Their interests are always in the forefront. So the agency, unfortunately, paints this picture of it being very cold and very sterile. And so, oh, then you're seeing pictures and you're almost going through lineups, and you would think that you're buying a car. And so, and then they start throwing you all these other little quotes and little, what do you call it, the jargon, so to speak. And then you start associating the child as a car with the options, and then, oh, the option to buy, or do you want to lease, or do you want to, and it's sad, because it's very frustrating, because it is, you're trying not to be too emotionally attached, which you are from the get-go.
Yeah.
And then that's your desire.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then they throw that wrench at you, and then it's the biggest, you know, the biggest, downer. I'm not downer, but it's the most, disappointing and the most, what do you call it? What's the word I want to use? I mean, we unfortunately had a situation where we were getting very close to being selected to have a placement, and unfortunately, we had here's a jargon word, a disruption, because it isn't it isn't a problem, because there's no such thing as a problem in the adoptive world.
They call
world.
It a disruption.
A disruption, because it was a disruption in paperwork.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so because of that, when we received the phone call that it wasn't going to happen, it felt like we both had lost a family member. But yet, we still didn't have that connection yet with the children. The children didn't have that physical connection with us yet. It just appeared on paper that there was that connection. So you start working yourself up, and then when that letdown comes in, then it's just like, oh my gosh, you just lost a part of you. Yeah. And you think that you're a failure, and they go, why don't they like me? What is it on this paper that they don't like about? And it's not necessarily you, it's something
the whole situation, the whole mix. You have to put all the ingredients in there, and if they all don't match, you know, because we had seen pictures, got a little bit of history, because it was a sibling group of three boys. And, you know,
so you're considering having three, boom, right there.
Yeah, we were definitely ready. Wow. You know, we were ready. From the pictures, they looked great. What we had read, because when you're going through the process, I mean, they just give you just a little blurb mm-hmm. about each child, and that's it, you know, just like the little sticker, you know, on the car, you know, that's all you get. This is what we get to read, and that's it.
Wow.
Until you buy it, then you get the owner's manual. You know, but we have
like
this little
car. Okay.
The little blurb on the kids, and, you know, just from the pictures, you start drawing that attachment, because, you know, we want children bad.
Yeah.
We really do want them. Then we got the phone call. I got the phone call first that we weren't going to get those children, and I had to, you know, take a few moments, 30 minutes by myself.
How long did that, from that moment that you chose until the moment that you found out that you can't?
That we weren't going to get those kids?
Yeah. Within a week's time.
Within a week's time.
So it's a week already, you're already building yourself up on a
exactly.
week.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they build you up. And it's so funny, because they come to you and they tell you, you've been selected. The agency wants you. You know, your papers look good. And it's like, okay, so we're having a meeting with the agency, and we'll let you know by a certain time frame. So that time frame comes, you're thinking, all right, here comes the phone call, because you're waiting for the phone call. Just like being pregnant, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is it. And then when they tell you it's not going to happen, then it's like it's the biggest, you know, crash to earth that mm-hmm. you've ever had in your life.
And yeah, one of the most important things for us, and it's one of the things that the agencies did tell us in the very beginning too, through our training, is to set up that support group.
Oh, okay.
Maintain your support group. And
Group is in a group of friends or families or just really
whoever is your support group. Okay. Whoever is your support group. You know, for Miguel, his sister. He bounces a lot of stuff off his sister.
I bounce off my sister and also my boss, because my boss is actually adopted. Okay. And so she understands what I'm going through and sees it from the other side. And so she understands when it doesn't happen, then she knows that what I'm feeling, because she's gone through it herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have a couple of good friends who I bounce off of. And our biggest support group is our synagogue.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Other people from our synagogue.
Note here, we're both Jewish.
I got the call on a Friday about 4 o'clock that we weren't going to get this sibling group. And I mean, it took me 30 minutes to digest it and get through my emotional before I could call him, Miguel, to let him know.
So you're the one, Steph, you're the one who gets in contact with them first. You're the primary contact for them, or
it goes back and forth.
Back and forth.
Back and forth between Miguel and I. Through the first, through this sibling group, I was the main contact. Right now, Miguel's the main contact, it seems like.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm on the internet,
yeah.
So, surfing away, but I'm not telling you what I'm surfing for.
Yeah, and that's one, and that's one of the things, too, you know, we had to make picture books of us, about our support group, our family, you know, so when they present us to these children, you know, instead of just being a biography of us, we do photographs, you know, pictures. We have a picture of our house or backyard.
This is what the kids will be living in. This
yeah,
is,
exactly.
This is
kind
the
of a, this is the environment. These are the family, the other people in our family who we deal with. We even have, there's a picture of me and our dog.
Yeah.
You know, picture of us when we were kids.
And you raise a really good point, because the picture book itself is actually presented to the children. So the children get to see it.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So they get to see, this is the environment you're going into. So they know from the get-go, these are the people you're dealing with. And so from that, that picture book, even though you're not supposed to judge, you know, a book by its cover, the picture book tells a thousand
it
words.
It tells a story.
So the kids can actually pick up on that. So whatever they see, they know what's real and what's fake.
Well, kids are more visual anyhow. I mean, sitting down and trying to read them something that is...
Yeah, that makes no sense to them.
Exactly.
They need visual. Yeah. I told Miguel to take a picture of the Wii, you know, but he didn't. Put that in there, but he didn't.
How about Lake Enticing? We have a pool.
Oh, we have pictures of the pool. We have pictures of the pool. People of everybody out playing in the pool and all that kind of stuff, you know, so...
But, you know, just to clear the air here, this is not the biggest downer. There's also been the biggest, most exciting ride we've ever been on because, again, going back to synagogue, it is not professing a religion in here or what have you, but it is a Jewish trait that family is the core of the family. You know, so it's family. You have children. You have children to bring you together. And it
generation
is
generation to generation.
Yeah, from generation to generation. And so it is the synagogue that actually had pushed us to open our eyes a little bit more. If we had doubts before, it wasn't until we started really going attending synagogue on a regular basis that actually just said, you know what, this is the right move to go. Yeah. And then the support mechanism that they have, the support that they have at synagogue is so strong that if we have a problem or we have a struggle, we can not only can we rely on our friends and our family, but we can also rely on synagogue to help us out in those really tough times.
Yeah. Would it be worth to mention what we were talking about earlier about because you did mention about religion, and you did mention earlier that there's some problem with that.
Well, it's during the so-called home study phase, and home study is when the it's the most invasive period of this entire process. This is when you have strangers constantly coming into the home, snooping through every nook and cranny. They're checking to make sure that you're not harboring
FBI background checks.
Yeah, everything. Oh, so it's very invasive. During this invasive process, they ask you about everything. They ask you about family life, about your upbringing, about discipline by your parents, and schooling, and how much do you cuss, and how much do you know? Do you watch pornography? Things of that nature. So they have to.
Oh, I can't. I can't be. sorry.
Well, you know, and then
it happens.
And then it wasn't until our religion, because, you know, it asked what religion, you know, we were going to raise, what religion we're going to raise the children. And because we're both Jewish, we would like the children to be raised Jewish as well. And so we were told from the get-go, CPS and agency individuals who are telling us that, oh, well, the majority, you're in the Bible Belt, the majority of the kids here are Christian, and we want to make sure that they have Jesus in their life. And I said, but we're Jewish. And so, well, they told us up front, you know, and I remember the conversation very well. And it's like, she says, well, you know, you're not Christian, so the majority, you know, your chances of you getting placement is very small because no agency out there is going to give you a child not raised Christian.
Yeah.
And so that to me was the biggest turnoff, but I was able.
Just frustration. I got really.
Even though probably most of the children in the program have no church.
And that's exactly. And that's exactly what I told them. And it's like, you know, a 3-year-old doesn't have a choice. I mean, doesn't know anything about religion. It's whatever the parents, you know, want them to be.
Yeah, these kids are environments where they've been tossed around and not.
Church is not one of the central.
Deals. It's not.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
Sunday morning was usually, you know, taking care of mommy and daddy who've been drunk or from the night before.
But I think we both agreed that once we do get a placement, that we're actually going to try our best to introduce them to all religions, and then once they get to that point where they know their understanding of religion, what it is, we'll give them that option. It's like, okay, you know, we're both Jewish. Do you want to continue being Jewish, or do you want to be Christian, or do you want to be Hindu, Muslim, whatever? Yeah. You know, we're going to leave that up to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah. But it's just a very interesting thing that, you know, if Kinkeet had been governor, it'd have been different.
So, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
But unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast because of the political climate at the moment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you've been mentioning about, you know, you presenting yourself and you know, showing pictures and your desire, and also the agency would tell you what their criteria is and stuff like that. But how about the children themselves? Do they have a say on anything?
They have bottom decision.
Really?
The social worker, our social worker, what happens is that she takes her information, on the website and through the internal agencies throughout the state, they'll send out blasts that, you know, we have these children available. And by meeting with our social worker one-on-one, she got to know a little bit more about us, what our needs are and what we're looking for. If she sees a match, she'll call us or shoot us an email, say, hey, you know, I think these might be a good match for you. And then she'll submit it in to the caseworker either in San Antonio or Corpus or center information.
El Paso or what have
El Paso.
You. And then it's up to wherever the child is, what region of the state that the child is in, that they are then presented with. You have
That social worker has to look at it and see if she thinks will be a good fit for the kids.
So the child is also making the decision as well. So it's two ways. It's not just one way. We don't just pick and say, we want these. But they're doing the same thing to us. So they're seeing our profiles. They're seeing our picture book. And they're seeing what we're made up of. And so it's up to them. It's like, and they're asked the same questions. You know, they're asked the question of, how would you like having two dads, or how would you like having two moms? And most of the kids, they really don't care, just as long as they have
a stable
family environment.
Yeah.
You know, and research has shown that kids do much better when they're in an environment with two adults, you know, so to speak, regardless of
the gender.
Yeah. Doesn't make a difference.
And as long as they're shown love and respect. And a family environment, a family unit, that's all they want.
Exactly.
What they want.
What's the oldest that was a candidate for you so far?
So far, that
10?
No,
13-year-old.
13-year-old, yeah. Wow.
When y'all decided to do this, did y'all put down certain characteristics you were looking for? Or?
Yes, we did, and we strayed from that. Yeah.
Well, the reason I asked is because at one time, you know, I've always wanted kids, so I was trying to lead John down that little primrose path, but I said, well, let's look at fostering children.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's temporary and stuff. And then you get looking at this, all the stuff on the fostering children site, and they have all the profiles of the children, and every one of them was almost a special needs child.
Exactly.
And that kind of freaked, I think, John out a little bit, and it kind of freaked me out too. But then, you know, the more you think about it, it's just like, they say all these kids have these special needs, but you're also looking at these kids that have been in foster care or in unstructured environments for so long that once they get that, will that clear up? I mean, because once they get stable and they know that nothing's going to happen, and you know, how much does that really go away, and how much, you know? So I didn't know if y'all had a...
I'm not really sure. Yeah, we're not sure, but I can tell you that the agencies have deal with all kinds, so... does everybody want a healthy child? Yeah. The answer is yes, you know. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, some of these children, they're special needs. Mm-hmm. They either have some type of medical disability, or they were product of some type of abuse, either be it sexual or financial or physical. Something of that nature. So to say that they're not damaged goods, you know, it's like saying we're not damaged goods, but we're all damaged goods. You know, so everybody has something.
Everyone is good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but does some of the problems clear up? Some of them do. You know, some of them because they crave that stability. Yeah. Just
they
like
want
we,
attention, and they're wanting attention, and they want stability.
Just like we crave to be in a loving, structured environment, to have someone else return the same kind of love. They want the same thing that we do, and so. So we can relate to that. The children who have those medical disabilities, some of them, you know, they never overcome those medical disabilities. So it's always going to be to find that special person, that special couple that is willing to open up their home and their hearts for these individuals, because they know that sometimes the children don't live for a very long period of time. But as long as there are couples out there that just... they just want to cater to MS children or something to that nature. And so, you know, they're out there. It's just that, unfortunately, the state has so many children, and there's not enough people who are willing to open their arms for them.
Yeah.
Because if you go through any of the, when we first started the training classes, the educational classes, you know, they basically told us, they said, everybody wants a white baby.
Yeah.
Oh.
Everybody wants a baby.
White baby girl.
And that's what everybody wants. They want an infant. And when we first did it, when we filled out, did our home study, and, you know, we said 0 to 6 Hispanic. You know.
I said, how hard is that in Texas? Okay, yeah. Come on. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but we, you know, we didn't want to go over 6. We wanted them young so they weren't too damaged.
Too damaged, right?
But, you know.
You want more chances to mold them.
To mold them.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yes.
But then at the same time, you know, if you give them a structured environment, you can mold, you know, you can mold them to do whatever they want. They're going to be individual, you know, free-thinking individuals, but at least you'll know that
hopefully
you had
you think
a hand.
That you've taught
exactly
them a few basics, you know, and help
survival skills, just like, you know, like everybody else, and, you know, be respectful and things of that nature.
Yeah. But and as we've gone along now, we're basically, you know, we're looking for a sibling group, you know, 2 or 3, and even up to 12, 13, 14?
Possibly, yeah.
Possibly years old. Yeah. Okay, wow. And how long have you been together again? About
eight and a half, almost nine years.
Gosh. And along these years, when did you really start doing this? Did you start really searching?
Well, the whole process has started. It's been about 18 months now, right?
No, it was May.
May of last year.
13 months.
So we started this entire journey 13 months. And the funny part about it is that we assumed that once we started that we were in the pool. But we found out that it's a long process, you know. CPS and the state of Texas and agencies and the city of Houston and all the Harris County require a certain amount of training that's required to deal with foster children, because some of them are come with some type of setback, you know,
challenges
and what have you. You have to confront those challenges, because some of the foster parents or our adoptive parents are not familiar with this because they don't come from those backgrounds, and so for them to automatically have a stranger come into their home, and then this stranger has all these other social and emotional ills with them, and trying to deal with that, you know, so you need to be prepared for the extreme. And it's so funny because the agencies, when you go through the training, they train you for the extreme. So these are the extreme cases. So they're training you like you're about to go into battle and combat. You know, and you need to know how to do first aid and CPR and how to deal with drug addiction and sexual abuse and all these other
and how
things.
To control the child if they start getting combative with you.
Exactly.
Because you're not, you know, because you don't want to hurt them and bruise them.
Yeah.
Go to your room.
But for some of them, it's not just go to your room. For some of them, it's literally it's a life and death situation, because for them.
Oh, okay. You can just say that.
No, yeah, because a lot of them, you know,
they're lashing out.
Yeah, because a lot of them that go to your room is a trigger for them about what they just went through.
Because the parents didn't birth parents didn't want them, so it was easier just throw them to the side, throw them to the room, and just ignore them.
Yeah, exactly. And so, it's a lot of training, and it took us.
That must be hard.
Yeah, it took us a little bit over half a year just to get to that point that we're ready to be presented to the agency to say yes, we're going to approve them as foster adoptive parents.
And that was from the agency. Then we had to get state approval.
So we had to go before a judge to make sure that we were okay, and then not only do we have to go through this, but our families have to be informed, and then there's this long
We have to have letter of recommendations from family members, friends, our bosses. This stuff has to go in.
And then from there, it also goes to making sure that the home is safe and fire codes and city codes.
You said y'all had to call the fire marshal out to the house to get them to inspect.
I had to have a re-inspection today.
Yeah, we've gone through a lot of pretty penny out of our pocket. It's been quite a bit.
Because, you know, like even if we have any, no matter what children, you know, one of the first things that, you know, you have to put the little child latches on all the cabinets. You know, since we have a swimming pool in our backyard, we had to put the child-proof fence all the way around the pool, 4 feet tall, the mesh fence where they can't climb over it. You know, extra added expenses.
Yeah, and then it's the car and the insurance and the
child seat
and mm-hmm. car insurance, and then there's health insurance, and you know, it's just a never ending thing. So it's so called the training manual to how to become a parent, which everybody should go through, but everybody goes through it.
Well, for straight couples having their own kids also, they do it gradually. Well, while
they learn as you go.
They learn as you go. But here, you have to, boom, you have to. Yeah.
We have to learn it from the very beginning before they even look at you for putting you in a placement.
We have a 3-inch binder, a ring binder of scenarios of what should happen, what do you do, and who do you call, and things of that nature. And sometimes it's impossible to remember all of that. You know, you do the best you can, but you try to remember the basics, and then you have to constantly recertify yourself to make sure that you're still okay by the state to foster a dog.
You have to take what, 3 or 4 hours of classes, like 3 to 4 classes a year to renew,
just to keep going.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. It's an ongoing, constant, continuing.
And just think, we're still together.
Exactly. That's a big challenge right there.
We've had our moments. Let me let you know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, probably to summarize, right now, what state are you in now?
Texas?
Well, right now. exactly. We're in Texas, okay?
I'm in a euphoric state.
Last Monday, a week ago today, our social worker had to do her quarterly visit. So she came to our house, did her little inspection, and she goes, "Oh, by the way, I want y'all to look at these two boys."
Okay.
It's a 9-year-old and a 3-year-old. And she goes, "I think they're a really good fit for y'all."
And they're siblings, of course.
They're half brothers.
Okay.
Same mother, different fathers.
Okay.
And she threw her name in a hat.
Actually, no. The
agency in the other city.
One of the most conservative parts of the state actually contacted her about our profile, Step and myself, and she thought, she was shocked herself. Our worker was shocked herself, because a conservative part of the state is willing to place their children with same-sex couple. And so
the presentation to the kids was last Thursday, and they didn't make a decision that day. We're supposed to actually hear sometime this week, and it's between us and one other couple. So hopefully this week we'll find out either a yay or nay.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping for a yay, but we'll take whatever happens. You know, if it doesn't happen, then it wasn't meant to be.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're going through a private agency, right?
Yes and no. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Okay.
We went through. Yes, it is a private agency, but they work strictly with Child Protective Services.
Okay,
I see.
So. It's kind of semi-private.
We're running out of time, and it's great. I mean, all this information about having to adopt kids is really just,
it's a good journey.
I mean, they usually say that buying a house can make or break a relationship.
Yes.
No. Going through this can make or break a relationship. We've had our heated discussions and arguments about this.
Mm-hmm. The other thing with this, if you get buyer's remorse, you're kind of screwed.
You're right.
So you're stuck with that till 18 years.
Exactly.
We wish all the best.
Thank you.
Good luck.
If anybody has any questions for Step and Miguel, they can email them to Maynard or myself, and
yes,
we can get them to them and get y'all some answers if y'all want them.
True.
We hope y'all the best, and hopefully we all hear some. Hopefully the next time we have y'all on the show, you'll have.
Oh yeah, when you have your kids, we'd like to have you on the
show.
You'll
have the Brady Bunch on here.
That's right.
That'd be awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening, and if you have comments, it would be great for you guys to call us, and if you have questions about adoption and stuff, maybe Miguel and Step can share the experience, and we'll pass it on to them. If you have questions, you can email me at nard@bearpodcast.com, or you can email
ray@bearpodcast.com.
Yes, that's right. And if you have comments, you can also put it on the website at www.bearpodcast.com. And the phone line, comment line, Ray.
It is 206-222-2327. That's 206-222-BEAR.
Yes, that's 206. Yeah. 222 Bear. Yeah, leave your comments and we'll play it in the show. It'd be great to have comments about if you're interested in having kids of your own. Like previous episode, we had Gary and Andrew having their own baby, biological baby, and Miguel and Step here having their, well, very soon, hopefully. Yeah, good luck having your own babies.
My ankles are swollen.
Well, thank you, Miguel and Steph. So thank you very much for being in the show.
Thank you.
All right. So, okay. So, guys, leave your comments also on iTunes. Yeah, subscribe by iTunes also. All right. So, Ray, I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you. We'll catch you guys on the next episode. Many wolves and many hugs.